Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hope Mindful Compassion Show. My name is Paul Garrigan and I look after the mindfulness program here at Hope.
And I'm Samina Khan, I'm one of the therapists here at Hope.
So Samina, you were saying today we're going to talk about sub-personalities. What is that?
It's a fascinating area for me. So Freud was probably the first person who started looking at the personality in terms of dividing it into different elements. And so the classic thing with Freud was the id, ego, and superego. But since that time, there's been a lot of interest, and particularly recently, over the area of looking at how, for all of us, we have different parts or sub-personalities to ourselves. So it's very different to multiple personalities. So it's not something that's at all schizoid in that way, but just the fact that for each of us, we have different parts of ourselves. And at times, different parts will be at the forefront and others will be at the back.
And how would sort of finding out about this or working with this be of value to, say, people who come to rehab?
So a classic thing is the inner child. So the inner child is one of the classic ways of looking at trauma or looking at how to reconnect to who we really are. So many people with addiction and many people coming here really suffer from very low self-esteem and self-loathing. And so one of the ways of working with that is to really try to connect to the inner child that's in all of us. That is the aspects of ourselves that holds our innocence, that holds our joy, and often holds a lot of pain as well.
So personal. How many? I mean, obviously there's a few of them. Any idea how many? Is there any?
Well, there's some new modalities. One of which is called internal family systems, and it's very well known. It basically divides up subpersonalities into three main groups. And so you've got managers, you've got firefighters, you've got exile, and then you've got the self.
And do these sort of somehow still kind of relate to sort of Sigmund Freud? So, because especially the first one there kind of sounded like the manager, like the superego.
Not really. Okay. They're kind of quite different to that. And so the self would be seen as a healthy part, the part of us that, say, in meditation that we can encounter, this part of us that's the witness or that's the presence of who we are. And so what we're trying to do is integrate as much as we can into the self. And then the other part, so really thinking about the exile are the parts of ourselves that hold our pain, our trauma, that we don't want to be in contact with. And so the manager and the firefighter's job is to help us navigate the world without disturbing the exile. And oftentimes, if the exile holds a lot of energy, holds a lot of trauma, has been through, like this person has been through a lot of abuse, a lot of neglect, a lot of whatever it is, that part of them is overwhelmed and so splits from the rest of the personality. So we don't need to, it's like that numbing out thing that we do, numb out the fight, flight, but often we freeze as well. So it's the part of our personality that's frozen. And so the rest of us is doing everything that we can to avoid being with that. So being super competent, being independent, going about the world, but whenever we feel triggered in some ways, then it's like, and then the firefighters come on board. And addiction is often related to having that very strong need to not be in contact.
Can you explain a bit more about the firefighter?
So the firefighter's job is to make sure that if there's a sense that you're feeling that overwhelming trauma coming to the surface, doing anything it can to stop that happening. And so that's when you could turn to the drugs, to drink, to numb out, to avoid feeling that overwhelming pain that the exile carries.
I mean, from what you're saying, it sounds like the firefighter is a kind of like a bad guy. I mean, is there a need for a firefighter, or is it always kind of toxic? Or
so in terms of internal family systems, all of the parts of ourself are there to help us. All of them, but their job can get a little bit extreme, or they've been distorted in some way. So whilst it's meant to help us, so the firefighter, so taking the drugs or the drink, The aim is to protect us from feeling the overwhelm, but as we know, doing that isn't healthy in itself. So in that way, the initial aim is healthy, but the way it goes about doing it is no longer healthy.
Yeah, because I was thinking, it's like, so say in some cases, like, with the palliative care, sometimes denial can actually be a good thing as a short-term strategy. So say your doctor tells you, you're going to die and you just can't handle it.
Yeah.
So, would that the firefighter be playing a sort of kind of positive role?
Absolutely. So all defense strategies are there to protect us, but they're a short-term gain, long-term pain. So in the short term, we get the protection, we numb out, we don't feel that thing that we didn't want to feel. But long term, it numbs us out to everything else in life as well. It's like you can't switch one part of ourselves off without switching a whole load of other things off.
And I'd imagine that stuff, whatever you're numbing, it's going to still be there anyway, just numbed.
Absolutely. It's still going to be there. Still controlling a large part of you.
And so how do we, with this approach, do we sort of actually start to tackle the firefighter? Is there a sort of process with this?
So it's to try and firstly bring awareness to all of these aspects. So bring awareness, make the client recognize that these different aspects of them are there. And oftentimes, like a very strong aspect of one of the managers is their self-critic. Like many, pretty much all of our clients here have huge self-critics. And so to recognize the self-critic and to try and bring some of the self-awareness and compassion to the self-critic and to recognize the self-critic is trying to protect you. It's like by criticizing you, it's trying to make you safe, like almost like getting in before someone else can so that no one else can hurt you, like you're protecting yourself. So it's a very, again, distorted way of protecting yourself.
So it almost sounds like the problem is imbalance rather than, any of these particular parts of us being, bad in themselves.
Yeah, none of them are bad in themselves. They're all there to try and help us. But yes, we need to bring them from their very distorted ways and try and live more out of ourself, more out of the awareness and the presence.
So, is this obviously something you would need to do with a therapist?
Yes. Well, there are internal family systems. There are lots of books out there now that do suggest ways of being able to work with it.
Is there anything you can mention?
If you look up Richard Swartz, then he is the founder of the internal family systems, and he's got lots of books online.
And, so working with a therapist, we say people work with the books maybe, but if they're going to be working with a therapist, is this something you use for your clients?
And it's also quite Gestalt way as well of working. So in Gestalt also recognises subpersonalities. We'll do the classic two-chair approach or more than two chairs. So you'll actually have a client inhabiting one part of the personality and then talking to the other part, and then they'll switch positions, they'll switch chairs and then talk to the other part. So you can try and bring integration in that way as well.
And is that how you more or less do it? You just communicate different?
You can do. That's one way of doing it. It's a very classical Gestalt way of working.
And would that be something that would be done sort of vocally, or could it be done inside our head?
No, vocally. It's best to speak it out.
Why is that? Why is it best vocally?
So that they're hearing themselves, and also you're externalizing it. So rather than it just being something that's happening inside your head, when you hear it, there's a certain distance that's already happening.
Mm.
So yeah.
And ideally, through this process, what should start to happen?
More acceptance, more awareness, and ultimately more integration.
Is there anything that could kind of go wrong with this approach?
So anyone trying to crash into the exiled part, anyone trying to go somewhere that is not ready to be met yet. But generally, when you're working, it's the client that leads this. So the therapist's job is to just follow the motions of the client rather than to lead the process. You're just watching, observing what's going on, and then inviting those parts to come forward.
And do you find that sort of, some clients may already kind of have a sense of this. They may not use the same terminology, but they may kind of already identify those different parts of themselves.
Absolutely. Like even just now, this morning in process group, one person was talking about this sense of conflict inside herself. She was talking about whether she wanted to stay longer. And a part of her was telling herself, yes, she needed to stay longer. And another part was going, no, but I've got all these reasons that I need to leave. So already it's very, very common. We know that we have internal conflicts going on.
And are there people, I suppose there are people who are going to be very resistant to sort of seeing themselves as made up of different personalities? Are there?
I've never met anyone who's, when we start working and people, because I would only bring it up when I notice it happening within a client. So when I notice some kind of obvious conflict going on or different parts of them speaking, I would just point it out and go, oh, yeah, I can see that. So I haven't ever met anyone to reject the notion.
That's brilliant. And so say, you know, you do work here. How would clients sort of continue when they went home with this?
Well, hopefully, just having that awareness and especially bringing...
Like that thing you talk about, like doing the voices, is that something you just do once and or twice and don't need to do? Or is it something you could almost continue with?
It's bringing awareness, like recognizing yourself and, oh, okay, there's my critical voice again. So recognizing that, again, just bringing awareness, then go, oh, okay, yeah, that's my critical voice. Maybe I could bring some more kindness to it. Or maybe what's really going on? Or maybe... with the critical voice, recognizing it's okay, you don't need to be here, I'm safe, it's okay.
So it's sort of working from acceptance all
yes.
the time.
Yeah.
I mean, because I imagine some people might get very, use it as a self, as an excuse for more self-loading. Oh, there's that negative part again, here we go again.
Absolutely, and you have to be really careful of people who kind of bring awareness and then beat themselves up through the awareness, absolutely. But you just, again, just point it out.
That's brilliant. Is there anything more you'd like to sort of, or any final thoughts you'd like to add to that?
Well, one of the things for myself personally, because I started working with this myself, with my therapist many, many years ago, and it was through a guy called Franz Rupert, and he works with constellation. Now, that's a whole other topic, but you can actually bring these sub-personalities into working in a constellation way. But maybe we'll talk about that another time.
Sounds really interesting. And would you say, you know, from other approaches that there can be more than four sub-personalities?
Oh, absolutely. Those headings are like the overall general headings. And under them, there'll be many other personalities that you'll find.
And is there value in sort of getting down? I mean, is the four kind of enough for most people, or is it worth digging deeper?
Oh, to dig deeper and to recognise which ones are present for each person. So then you can become more familiar with what's going on for you.
And there will probably be a sort of individual, you know, some people may have, you know,
Yeah, like some people have a very strong perfectionist driver, you know, have to be competent and capable and individualistic. So, yeah, some people will have more of that than others. But, yeah, they tend to be universal.
And where did they come from?
Well, that's a very interesting question. It's just a way of our psyche, our sense of self being able to function in the world.
And is it something we pick up or is it something we come prepackaged with, would you say?
Ooh, again, that's a very, that's a question for a philosophical kind of debate in that who are we and where do we come from and do we come as a full self or are we formed through our environments? Yeah.
Yeah, the reason I ask is especially with the sort of self-criticism, because you have people like, you know, the Dalai Lama was quite the ones saying that people in Tibet didn't really understand the concept of self-hatred. Now, I don't know how true, you know, that is or whatever, but this idea, it would seem to imply that, you know, maybe some of this is just stuff we pick up. Maybe we learn to be self-critical.
I do definitely think there's a huge cultural influence. It's not only the culture of our family, but our culture that we live in, which is kind of the family of our family, that we get it all over the place, especially through advertising. Like advertising is built on fostering a sense of not good enough, so we have to go and buy stuff to make ourselves feel better.
So you've used that term a few times now, family. So it really does kind of seem that way, that you're basically incorporating your family into your sort of thinking almost, that kind of dynamic.
And I like, again, it's a very common thing. I've been working with someone recently who recognizes that she's internalized her mother's critical voice, and she hears her mother's critical voice inside her all the time.
Yeah. Well, that's brilliant. I would love to do one on the constellation?
Constellation.
In the future, because I think it would fit in nicely with this. Yeah. Thanks very much, Samina. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.